Hey guys, it's Ben McKay here. You're listening to the Lunchtime Catch-Up Podcast.
Welcome back to the Lunchtime Catch-Up Podcast. The Lunchtime Catch-Up Podcast is two blokes that have known each other forever, who catch up most days in the Melbourne CBD for lunch to talk everything Essendon Footy Club. My name is Grant, and with me is Scott.
Hello, everyone. Good to be back. We'll talk about the game.
The abomination, yep.
Yeah, that was not fun to watch for any of us. Look, we unfortunately, we do this to him every time, but yes. We're going to have the smooth sounds and calm sounds of Rowan Conley coming in. Rowan, you're joining us. How are you, mate?
Any chance you guys could get me on when we're actually going okay?
It's a really good point you make, mate. We have written that down in on paper. That's a good point.
I know I can do a decent spray, but I can actually be positive at times as well. It'd be nice to show your listeners that once in a blue moon. But
it's a good
anyway,
point.
I guess the side has to deliver to be able to do that.
I was going
to
say, in our defence, when we went three in a row, it's not often that you can say we've had a month of good footy, but maybe early last year. But, hey, look, a bit to talk about. Coming into the game, I'll get your thoughts. Coming into the game, there was kind of mild praise, I guess, towards the players around the kind of blue collar, you know, the contested numbers, the clearance numbers were looking okay. We all know the word that got thrown around by the club and the edge and all that sort of stuff. We come into the gather round up to quarter time. You could almost argue that things continued on as normal. But then the worry for every Essendon fan then happens, and a complete walkover, and we lose the game
very,
very easily.
Badly.
How do you sum this up, mate? I'm scratching my head and going, how do you sum up the Jekyll and Hyde that is the Essendon Football Club?
Well, my mind immediately goes back to a moment just on the halftime siren where I should bring my son David in at this point because he was sitting next to me and we had two cans of Coke, which fortunately we'd both finished. But that moment where the ball bounced in the midst of three Essendon players who just stood there and it went to Finlayson, who kicked a goal halftime siren, which was, what, the third goal in the last minute and a half. I think at that point, with one gesture, I managed to sweep both Coke cans off the table and into the wall right behind me here. And it was one of my vintage dummy spits, I must say, but that was bad. And then it actually got worse. And I was angry, and I'm still a bit angry, to be honest, because it's not the defeat. It's not even necessarily the size of the defeat. It's just that it's that feeling of Groundhog Day. It's like how long has this garbage been going on? And by garbage, I mean, you know, they string together a couple or a few decent performances and then there's some sort of test, and it seems to be inevitably either interstate or on a Friday night or some sort of bigger occasion, and they just turn it up. They did. I don't care what anyone says. I had this debate with someone on Twitter, or if you used to call it X, on Saturday, I think. And because I thought the effort, I tweeted something about, you know, the effort was just garbage, you know, and someone said, oh, there's no such thing as poor effort. And it's one of those sort of, you know how so many footy supporters now, they just like to parrot the jargon they hear on first crack or whatever and you know, make out like they're experts. Not saying claiming to be an expert here, but yeah, there is lack of effort. I actually discussed this with Tony Shaw on 3AW on both Saturday and Sunday. And you could see, even from the TV, and it's not always easy to see these things, but you could see the lack of hard running off the ball that was going on through that centre square that on the part of the midfield mainly, just refusing to run back hard enough, with the obvious consequence that all those port forwards just had acres of space and kicked easy goals, with often without any pressure on. And I'm just sick of that, because you don't actually, as you guys know, I'm quite sceptical about just how good this Essendon list could be, even in terms of talent. But you don't actually need talent to be able to give effort. And there are several clubs in the competition who don't have the same level of talent, but whose effort is far less conditional than Essendon's is. And that really worries me, because ultimately, to me, that is a reflection and a comment on an inferior culture. And I think that, you know, and again, I haven't had a discussion with anyone at Essendon about this for some time, but I reckon they know that this is a weak culture, and it's going to take a long time to fix it up. And by a long time, I mean past this generation of players. It's, you know, you don't fix these things up in 1 or 2 years. This is a career thing, you know. And unfortunately, there's too many of those Essendon experienced players and leaders who don't really understand the level of work, commitment, whatever, that is required to be really, really successful at a high level. I was saying to you guys off air, and look, you know, I know there'll be people listening to this and going, oh, here we go. What do you know, Conway? Blah, blah, blah. Well, I can tell you this. I watch a lot of footy. I watch just about every game every week. I'm in the rooms. I'm at clubs. And, it, you know, much as I love Essendon, my focus is on 18 clubs. So yeah. I see a lot of what goes on at other clubs. And I see this stuff. I see how a really good club works and ticks over and gets everyone on the same page. I see what it looks like when a young guy comes into the system and develops some raw talent into a polished product. I've seen that happen. Doesn't happen at Essendon. And, you know, there's been, it doesn't mean that people don't know what needs to happen, but things are so crook that those improvements can, they take literally years and literally generations of players to affect, unfortunately. And this is a thing where, you know, we grew, well, I'm a lot older than you, but, you know, like when I was a little kid, Essendon were weak, and then we had the Sheedy era. And what happened in building a successful, sustainable, strong culture, what happens is you don't just get the benefits of it immediately, you get the benefits of that in future generations, because the right examples are passed down from player to player to player. And Essendon survived on that for a good 30 years. Now, unfortunately, because things have been pretty crook basically for 20 years, there's no one there who has experienced what that successful required culture is. So often I feel the examples that are being handed down from player to player to player are inadequate. And so it's quite possible. And look, Andy McGrath, Andy McGrath seems like a really good bloke. I think he's played really good footy this year. But sometimes I hear him talking about leadership and whatever, and I think, geez, mate, I'm not hearing this from Tim Watson or Terry Danaher. I think what you think is the right example probably isn't what the players at the best clubs are telling their younger teammates. And I don't mean that personally. I don't mean he doesn't try as hard as he can and he doesn't genuinely think he's doing the right thing. But this is how far behind the pack I think the Essendon Football Club is culturally. And if you want to get into this nebulous discussion about culture, because people get annoyed with it, but I think it's a real issue for the Essendon Football Club.
Yeah.
I'll finish this off. So I will let you get a word in.
That's right, mate.
I've been thinking about this a lot over the last 24 hours. Two things from Essendon's recent past really, really worry me and drive home to me how deep-seated this problem is. And you both know what they are. Well, when I say them, you'll nod your heads because we're all familiar with them. One is that infamous game in 2017 when Essendon lost to Brisbane, who'd barely won a game all year, and the then CEO, Xavier Campbell, put out a tweet saying, not good enough, not nearly good enough, I think were his exact words. And then The players cracked the sads and he was forced to apologise to the playing group. I have still never really been able to comprehend just how bad that was that that happened, that the club allowed it to happen, that the players did that and weren't totally embarrassed, that Xavier said, okay, I better apologise rather than telling him to get stuffed, and that the club made him do it. I mean, that is just such a weak thing for a club to do, and basically says your players are running the show. So that, and that's, okay, it's 7 years ago, but have things really changed substantially? No, they haven't. The second one, and this is a tribute to the guy himself, Zach Merritt, if he isn't one of the best captains in the competition already, his game has just gone to another level altogether since he became captain. He has risen to the challenge. He loves that role. What about the fact, I just keep thinking about it, every week he plays a great game, and every week I think we're so lucky to have him. What about the fact that Zach Merritt in 2020 was voted out of the leadership group by his peers? What does that tell you, guys? Doesn't that tell you that they couldn't cop the fact that this bloke was so dedicated and worked so hard and occasionally had a stern word with them because they weren't pulling their weight? So their response to that wasn't to, we've got to lift our standards to Zach's. It's, let's get him out of the leadership group. Mm. Now, those two things, I reckon they are as bad a reflection on a club's culture as you can possibly have. And, yeah, it's now 4 years down the track from that second example. But how advanced are things culturally and on the field from then? I would argue only a little bit. So, sorry, that was a 10-minute rant. But that's sort of the essence of how I feel about where the club is at culturally and how that impacts on what happens on the field.
No, look, I want to pick up on a point you did, talked about generations and why it still may take quite a bit of time to get success. And I watched the Geelong, the Bulldogs game, and Geelong is just a team I admire. I've admired for two decades, right?
Time.
And I'm seeing Holmes, I'm seeing Tanner Bruin, I'm seeing Stengel, and sort of no names, well, sort of semi-okay names, but just now absolutely flourishing. And they look like they're guns, and they look like better than our young kids, most of them. So they're the things that I get as a fan. I watch the game, but it actually hurts me a bit because I'm like, that's what I want. I want this team to come into a Hawkins, or Selwood previously, to understand what is required at this club. Because the Hurdy and Lloyds, we all know they set that tone, and the Watsons and Danahans and all that. But you're right. It's just, you can see it in a clear vision watching that game, going how settled they are in that culture.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I actually have made some notes here and I wanted to talk about Geelong. Now, you mentioned Max Holmes. I've known Max literally since he was a little kid. He grew up with my son and they went to primary school together. I used to watch the two of them kicking the footy in the front yard at Max's place. Let me tell you, he could kick a beautiful footy at the age of about seven. Nice. But he was a very speculative draft pick, right? He was picked at number 20. And he'd barely played, he'd only played about seven or eight games of junior footy, I think, the year he got drafted because he'd pursued athletics and he broke a leg the year he got drafted. But Geelong was so impressed with his athletic gifts and the fact that he had a good sort of sporting brain and his, you know, the psychological stuff. He's a great kid from a great family. And I remember it raised some eyebrows, him being drafted at 20. Well, who wouldn't think that hasn't paid off? He is going to be an absolute star if he isn't already. Tanner Bruin, he was picked at number 12. I still remember how unimpressed he was about the fact that GWS drafted him.
That's right.
Him.
He had the saddest face.
he did. And look, GWS have a great development program. They couldn't quite get the best out of him, though. But look at how Geelong has made him flourish. He's going to be really important for them. Ollie Henry, okay, the genes are pretty good. He was drafted at 17. That 2020 draft, so Tanner Bruin, 12, Ollie Henry, 17, Max Holmes, 20. Jake Bowie, number 21, played in a premiership side in his first year of senior footy. And the one that I really want to bring up, Bo McCreary, who was drafted at 44 in 2020. And I saw McCreary come into that Collingwood side, and I remember the first couple of games thinking, what's so special about this guy? I mean, not saying he couldn't be okay, but he did nothing particularly special about him. Well, I've seen him, I've watched enough Collingwood games over the last couple of years to see his rate of improvement to the point where his pace and his tackling pressure, defensive pressure, was really crucial in their premiership win last year. He's a seriously good player. He was drafted at 44. We had three picks at 8, 9, and 10. And, yeah, two of them have just been chronically injured, as per usual. That's a whole other area of discussion.
Yep.
And Perkins I like. I think Archie is solid and he's durable and he's, you know, that's what I liked last year, the fact that he fronted up and played every week, and now, of course, he's got injured. But are any of them, you know, anywhere at the level that the guys I just mentioned from the other clubs are? No, they're not. Essendon's development, I'll tell you this, I'm not going to talk out of school and name who it was, but one of the most respected former players in the competition who, you know, played for a great club, has won a stack of individual honours, you know, universally respected. I can tell you that he was sussed out by Essendon, among a lot of people, about, you know, where do we most need to improve. He said the single most important thing you guys have got to fix is your junior development, because it's absolute rubbish. Now, I know the club is onto that, and they're more numbers in that role than ever, but this is gets back to what I'm saying about you're not going to see the benefits of that for several years. And frankly, I'll be surprised if you see the benefits of that with most of the existing players in that system, because I think once it gets to that stage, the damage has probably been done in developmental terms. I'd love to be wrong, but I'm at the stage now where I think, you know, if Essendon is going to have that top of the ladder success, it's not going to be with anyone who's there at the moment, because I think it's 5 years away at least.
But Rowan, excellent points that you raise, and it does scare me a fair bit when you sort of hear it from an expert such as yourself. And I use that word expert because you do watch practically every game and you watch all the teams, and you've seen more footy than the majority of us combined, right? Can I ask you like a really simple question? You see a lot of effort in the Sydney game, a good amount of effort against a reasonable side. You see us, what looks like from the other side of the fence, a good amount of effort against the St Kilda game. We tried hard, what appeared to be trying hard for the four quarters, and we got over the line, and you go, from a supporter's point of view, you go, all right, I wonder if Max King in that side probably would have been a difference, and they kicked a lot of points, but at least there was that effort there. Is it a, how do I word this? Is it a conscious decision from the players to put the kind of effort in against St Kilda versus the kind of lack of effort that we saw this week? Because I really want to drill down on, where does the difference come from? Do the players see that they haven't been developed and are just kind of going through the motions every now and then? Or do they get into a game, they see that at the end of quarter time or something like that, they start to get on top of us, and they just go, frankly, I can't be asked? Like, what? In your opinion, what makes the decision to almost act like witch's hat? What makes the decisions on the ground? Because you've got three quarters to, I assume the coach went, what the hell are you doing? You've got to run back. You've got to make these changes. And they just don't make them? I want to understand why.
I don't think it's a conscious thing. I mean, it'd be a shocking indictment if it was.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think it is. But this is what I'm getting at, I guess, that and I was really impressed that, you know, the sort of commitment and the resilience in those first three games, even the loss to the Swans, was great. And I fell for it. I thought, okay, well, they've done that 3 weeks in a row. Why can't they do that, you know, 6 weeks out of seven?
Yeah.
And so we get to round four, and the first quarter's pretty good, and then things start going against them, and it's almost like the amount of psychological as well as physical energy required to extract that amount of effort out of themselves and grit their way across the line for those two wins is such that it can't be sustained for long enough. And I guess that's, you know, when you talk about development and when you, I guess that's part of what I think, I presume Brad would be talking about in terms of cultural learning, that that these things become habitual and instinctive rather than something that they have to consciously think about. And that, you know, if you're not having to actually go through a conscious process of, you know, it's sort of adding to the work you have to do, once it becomes instinctive and habitual, it doesn't feel like as hard a work, if that makes sense. And I know I've spoken to, you know, some of the Geelong guys through that era, like, you know, Jimmy Bartel and Cameron Ling and these guys, and you know, like, and they were seriously sort of underperformed, weren't they? Right up to, what was it, round five, 2007, and then boy, did the penny drop. And what happens is they will tell you that you create that not only winning habits with your tactics and structure and everything, but the winning mindset. And it sort of does the job for you, and it doesn't feel like hard work to do what you need to do to get that. Essendon hasn't experienced that, but what worries me is that it can fall apart to that extent.
Yeah.
In game four, you know, if it was sort of game 10 or 11, and the win loss record was, you know, 5-5, and there was a tipping point, well, after nearly 3 months, I'd go, yeah, okay, I get it. It's a long season. But this is week four, and I don't think Essendon's at a point where they can afford to do that. And it's why, I mean, and I sort of forgave them because things started to go right. But I was really ticked off after that first match simulation against St Kilda, which they lost by 10 goals down at Moorabbin.
Yep.
And people say, oh, it's practice match. What does it matter? Yeah. Well, you know, if you've been as crap as Essendon was at the end of 2023, it does bloody matter.
Yeah, that's
it does
matter. That was my point.
No, it does. And look, and even watching that Port game, if you told me who were the two hardest runners, you go, well, Zach Merritt is usually a fairly good standard every week. But I actually didn't like the fact, in probably even the first 3 weeks, Xavier Duursma's probably my second. I go, he's running defensively proud to try and help the back six. And you're like, oh, guys, this is a brand new guy who's missed a lot of footy, who had an interrupted preseason, and he's running as harder than any other mid I can see visually on the ground.
Well, it's funny you say that, because he's and part of his, I guess, dissatisfaction with what he was doing at Port Adelaide was that he was, last year anyway, he was being asked to play sort of a sacrificial role where he was almost a decoy at times, and doing a lot of that hard defensive running to get back and support the back six, and not playing enough of his own game. But he knows what's expected. And again, this gets back to this thing about one club versus another club. Isn't it interesting how so often the trade-ins Essendon brings from other clubs, their first season is always really, really good.
Devin Smith, yeah.
And we look at him, and we look at him, and we go, geez. And you can't help but think that they're learning better habits than what happens if that performance subsides? Is it injuries, or does it drop off because they get sort of sucked into the vortex of lower standards and lower expectations? And what makes it really difficult to break this, the spell almost, is the fact that, again, I keep coming back to this. I don't think that these guys are deliberately going, we're not going to really bust a gut this week. They probably really think they are. But if you're able to pick them up and put them in Collingwood's program for a week or Brisbane's program for a week, And this isn't a reflection on the coaching either. This is talking about being among that playing group. I reckon so often they'd be going, oh, geez. So that's what we should have been doing, you know. And you're not just trying to change this for one player. You're trying to change this for an entire club. And this isn't even touching on the genuine off-field stuff, which goes to, you know, people on the board, the sponsors, the patrons, the coteries and whatever, people who hang around footy clubs for the wrong reasons, people who hang around footy clubs, you know, for their own status bump as much as, the club's good. And all the, I'm not saying all those things are definitely still happening, but the toll that that stuff takes lasts a lot longer than the actual bad stuff lasts. I haven't expressed that very well, but I think, you know, I think some really poor culture and poor practices over a 20-odd year period, I reckon the odds are that you feel the impact of that for, God knows, maybe another longer, decade at least, maybe as long as it lasted. And that's what I find scary because, you know, between us, I turned 59 a few weeks ago. I haven't got that much longer left on this planet, and I'd like to see another flag before I cark it.
Hey, you and me both.
One area that I was really concerned about, and I still am. I brought it up in the AGM direct to the board, and I talked to a board member who was running for re-election, and it's just something I'm getting really annoyed at. And I know they're trying to address it. They brought in Matt Rosa. There's a VFL program, right? Round one, 2024 VFL program. You're hearing the commentators and the 16 debutants today for the Essendon Football Club. And, like, no one mentions it. Like, the whole leadership of the VFL list of players left the club. The captain, the, you know, everyone left. And you're like, here we are. I have to see the VFL on the weekend and see, you know, Archie Roberts and Davies and 18-year-old kids who have no support around them whatsoever of any muscle or experience over 25. And it's just like they talk about, and I actually said this on Blitz, but you can't talk about development program and put all the money there if this massively key area of where you're meant to develop your 18-year-olds is bare bone and they're getting flogged by 50 points every week. And it just frustrates the absolute daylights out of me that how come every VFL listed leader left? You've got to look into that as much as anything.
Well, what was the answer you were given when you brought that up?
Oh, that it's an important thing and we're bringing in Matt Rosa and we're getting going to get extra resources. I could say a bit more on what I've learned from it, but I can't strict confidence. But the players left for a reason, and we've got to get in better contact with them over the preseason, and actually keep in contact with them and make them actually feel like they, even though they feel listed player, that they're worthy and they are part of a club and a vision.
That's part of what I'm talking about, isn't it? So they might have actually got the development stuff right and they might have got the VFL program right, but the reputation of what has gone before means they're going to be paying a price for the bad stuff for a few years after it ends. So, yeah, no, look, what you're saying is spot on, because when players are out of form and you think, why is he getting a game? And you think, well, okay, who are you going to play in place of him? And so many of those guys in the VFL palpably aren't ready to be part of it yet.
No, just quickly, I watched a VFL game 2 weeks ago or two or three weeks ago. Nate Caddy played the whole game. Inside 50s was something like 62 to 31. And this is our centre half forward that we want to have this, you know, bigger than, you know,
Ben Hur,
top 10 pick, lots of talent. He's trying to get a mark at centre half back just to try and get into the game, just to touch the leather. And you're like, what is this doing? Like, he's meant to be leading out from the pocket, like, or from the top of the square. And you're like, this, I don't know, it just frustrates me.
Well, I brought up this thing about, you know, about what other experts have thought about Essendon's junior development. But the greatest single sort of proof of how dire it's been is the fact that beyond Zach Merritt, because Joe Watson was a father-son, there literally has not been a star produced by Essendon in the 21st century. So we're talking 25 years of drafting and recruiting. There's literally one star who wasn't a father-son who they had preferential access
locked away,
to
exactly.
being developed by the club into a star. And every other club would have at least, I'd say, you know, at least two or three.
Yeah.
I mean, look at even North Melbourne now. Like, it's fine for people to laugh about North Melbourne, but geez, Sheasel and McKercher and Wardlaw, wow. I'd love to have that midfield. you know, in a few years. They're going to be stars. What's Essendon going to have that rivals that? You know, we're all.
Yeah. I know. I found it a little bit amusing, the videos of Merritt in the off season, and nearly everyone he's saying how much he had to go outside the club to get mentored, to know what the industry is doing at a high level, to understand it and then play that way. But I thought, are you hearing the words that he's saying, Essendon? Like, I had to leave the club to get better mentorship.
Even, you know, I watched North play Brisbane and they got towed up, but even Comben playing as a key defender, you know, which is a change of role for him, but he looked pretty good, you know. And if I was a North supporter, I'd be going, wow, well, he's, you know, we're all wetting ourselves about the fact that Harry Jones has played 3 weeks in a row and has taken a few marks. And, you know, it's good to see, but, you know, is a guy like Harry Jones going to take Essendon from being a, you know, a mediocre club to a great club? I doubt it.
Yeah. Very last question before you, I know you've got to go. Very last question. I know it's been a bit of a dower, so let's try and work out something a little bit more positive. Do you actually believe we've got at least a start of trying to get things right? Like, are you, you've always discussed Brad Scott in a positive light, and as far as, you know, Vozzo coming in, are you still, do you sense that they get it? Or like, do you still sense I have confidence in that? Just as a final question.
Yeah, no, I really do. And, you know, I've said this since, you know, the new regime took over under Dave Barham, but, you know, I know Brad Scott pretty well and I've known him for a fair while, and I don't know Craig Vozzo that well, but, you know, his reputation precedes him and it's very good, and he's a football orientated CEO, which I think is pretty important for Essendon where they are at the moment. And yeah, I am absolutely convinced that they do get it. And really a guy like Brad gets it because he's been part of a successful club and he's coached at a club, and North, you know, North were okay when he coached him, and I think he really sort of got performances out of that list ahead of what they probably were entitled to, which is a big tick as well. But and Craig Vozzo, you know, was involved with the Eagles when they were, you know, incredibly consistently successful club. So yeah, these guys get it. What I think happens is these guys come in from other clubs and it takes a while to really, you know, not just get across who's who at a new club, but to sort of feel your way and work out how the politics works. And that's always more of a factor with Essendon than other clubs, unfortunately. And I think once they hear the truth, the sort of full weight of what's required hits them, it's sort of like, oh, God. And so I suspect that they've all felt that, but I'm happy to say I've got far more faith in this regime being able to correct stuff than I have in anything that's gone before it for at least, you know, 15 years. But again,
there's a lot of hard work to do.
there are no quick fixes on and off the field, and that's the disarming thing that, you know, we could, you know, okay, we can try and sneak in the finals. Does that really matter that much?
I mean, aren't
we over that? You know, you either want to be, you want to be a genuine contender or it doesn't really matter, does it? So
that is true.
I'm pretty resigned to the fact that, we're still a few years away from being a genuine force, I think. But I'd like to see this group of people be given enough patience and leeway to see it through, because I do think at least they know what is required.
Well, mate, thank you very much for joining us. We know we're going to let you go. We really appreciate your input and your expert advice. We know the fans love it when you come on. So I really want to thank you for your time.
We will bring you on when we win.
Absolutely. That is.
Look, please do make that commitment to me. I mean, I've got it. I know, was it the St Kilda game? You know, I was sitting in my reserve seat at bottom deck of Marvel, and people sort of go, oh, there's old misery guts again, you know. So I do get excited when we do well. So I would please bring me on after a win.
Absolutely, we absolutely will. So thank you very much, mate. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll be back with more of the pod after this.
Thanks, Ron. No muckraking journalist.
and have to take stock of the wholesale omission of outside perspectives. How does it make you feel to know that you voted for this?
Welcome back to the Lunchtime Catch-Up Podcast. Now then, a great interview with Rowan Connolly again. We love that bloke. We know you guys, from all the feedback that you give us, we know you love Rowan as well. He's great. We were sort of talking in the ad break just then that Rowan, if you ask him a question, you're going to get an honest answer. You're going to get a forthright, honest answer from the man, and it does not change. And we love that about him, and we know you guys do too.
Yeah, so look, obviously we've got the Bulldogs coming up on another Friday night game. We're all a little bit nervous, if we're being honest. How come, you know, the hard part to all this, right? And I know, look, I know, the negative vibe that we've got, it won't be enjoyed by everyone. There's fans out there that have opposite feelings. So I get all that. And
where look, do you go positive, mate?
And some may say, hey, it's 2-2. I expected us to be 2-2. I think the more just the way we lost is probably what we're trying to get at and address, I guess, things that have happened historically and how we can get better at it. And I don't know if the word is having more, you know, losses like Sydney, if we're going to have them, where you think you're not seeing it on attitude in that way. I know we lack class and a little bit sometimes we're not as talented as some of the top teams, but you just want a better cultural. So coming up with the Bulldogs, we're probably going to get a little bit of a replica almost Port Adelaide in some ways. You're going to have a pretty skillful kind of mids running around. Transition footy is a strength, and so it will be very interesting to see how they respond in this game. So I actually muted almost Grant. I got half a cough.
The cough button.
So it'll be interesting to see how they approach this game, where the competitiveness is. I'll be interested to see even just, this is my personal thoughts, the movements of Setterfield and Parrish and Redmond. There's some guys I'm looking and going, you almost feel like they've got concrete legs at the moment. Are they a little bit underdone or, you know, so that's just how I felt anyway, watching the game against Port. I just feel like some guys didn't seem right to me or just could not seem to get into a high sprint. Caught a power burst, but I don't know. Parrish obviously was well off his game, and we know Redmond was, and McGrath was, and there's a whole lot of guys. I think this will come down to where the tide turned against Port was in the rucks. Our rucks unfortunately just had a really bad night. So what does that mean? If you saw the rucks, we won the hitouts by about 10. We only had, out of the 30-odd taps, only 5 went to our advantage.
Yeah, that's big.
Soldo, who had 10 less, 12 went to advantage. So just simple, just our rucking craft, we just could not get. So Tim English, obviously, you front and centre in this game, really talented ruckman. Bontempelli, you know, roving. You got Libba. I mean, Libba, I watched the Bulldogs game. He's a sensation, man. He had 19 clearances and 28 contested possessions. Contested 28, 19 clearances. So we've got our work cut out because it is a bit of a very nervous energy I feel Essendon fans are going to have coming this Friday night. But I do expect a response. I do expect, you know, I don't. It was a worry that it happened in round 4 that we lost that badly, but you want a response, and it's, you know, I don't want the Essendon Football Club to be Friday night specialists as far as not turning up. If we're on the centre stage, I want a better response, and so we'll see what happens.
And it just unfortunate part for me is that it happens to each week that now this is a massive pressure game. Like last week, there wasn't any pressure on Port. There was. We've come off a win. We had a good showing against Sydney. We came off a win and we went, great, good. let's take on Port. Let's go after him, man. Like, we had our little tails up a little bit because we won against Sydney and St Kilda and we did well. And then we get pumped. Like, 180 plus degrees in the opposite direction happens. And now the pressure's on the players to perform. Like, we don't understand what the hell that game was against Sydney. So now the pressure's on them to perform again. Every single week they put such pressure on themselves by not every single week, but there are weeks like Port where you get hammered that badly that all of the supporters and everybody's looking at Essendon and all the commentators are looking at Essendon because they have to now respond, right? Mm. Wouldn't it be nice to have
lost by 15?
Lost by 15
and be really
points.
Competitive.
That's exactly right. And it's a bit sad that we say lose by 15, but if we had have lost by 15 and we had have played four quarters and Rosie had have beat us and, like, you go, fine, man. Like,
yeah, we weren't favourites. Like, I tipped Port by 19 or 20.
In Adelaide, right? Yeah. And that's all a good thing. So wouldn't it be then nice to come in and go, the doggies better look out because we're up and about. We're for four games or whatever it is, we're now putting in four quarters of effort, and when it clicks, when things start to click, when people start to, we start to kick more goals and that sort of stuff, that kind of effort transfers into wins easier. Mm. Now we're one step forward against St Kilda and four steps backward against Port. Mm. So now the commentators are all, and all the idiot oxygen thieves like Wilson can come out and say, oh, the Essendon edge, oh, it's gone. Now they've got to get their edge back.
I've said about two or three articles with the word frauds.
Yeah, frauds and all this sort of stuff. And imagine the players having to deal with the fact that effort against St Kilda was just a fluke, apparently, right? But then I look at him and go, what the hell was the effort against Port?
Yeah, so the effort was fine. Like Rowan said, the effort was fine for about 3 weeks straight. So it's just, you know, our ball use is – for all three has never been a highlight, trust me.
No.
But the effort's been there. But you just – I mean, they have to play with effort because this is my personal belief. Someone debated with me on Twitter on this, but my personal belief, they're not overly talented. So they need effort to try and match it.
As talented as I think as people think they are.
Yeah, well, just – I mean, obviously compared to top six teams. Like we're
yes.
Top six, eight teams. So we're just – we can see it. Like, we just continually turn over the ball.
But we have to be a club. Jeez, man. Like, and I think you made a good point in the interview with Rowan, is that the people that are putting in efforts are the ones that we've just drafted in. Dersma's running in both directions.
Gresham's doing well.
Gresham's doing really well.
Benny McKay was almost our best player.
Benny McKay, like, Jake Stringer's winning us goals again. Like, he's the guy winning the game for us. It just would be nice to have to change the thought process about the Essendon Footy Club from saying, well, they've just got to put in effort. It just has to have effort. Wouldn't it be nice to have effort as being unconditional and we now need to go, they've just got to get that forward craft working a little bit better. They've got to get that this happening a little bit better.
Yeah, tinker
and
with our game.
To tinker with the game as opposed to having to go back to the EDFL Unlightning Premiership under 12 style arrangement.
Just try.
Where the effort is the number one thing you've got to put in. Like, that's
a defensive effort too. I mean, they're very happy running one way, but yeah, just the defensive effort and their setup. It's just...
And that there's no one to drop them for, man. Like, and this is the thing, you can't place a size 14 in a rear end.
No.
Because there's nobody to drop them for.
I want to address that too, and I'm going to get shouted down here, but I keep seeing, like, Scott's not playing the kids. And Scott, like, I'm watching the VFL.
What kids?
Yeah, I'm watching the VFL. Cadiatti's too separate, you know, totally knocked out. He's not going to play this week. Like, he's not going to play. He's played one game in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, he needs actual time. At least
to see if he can kick a goal in the VFL.
Yeah, he needs.
Let's see if he can do that.
He actually needs a few juice games in the VFL. He's had a really unfortunate 6 weeks. But you know, I'll be honest. I watch Elwyn Davey and he's getting six or seven disposals, and it's just not.
Weed ain't there neither.
Archie Roberts, Archie Roberts is probably
maybe
the best of the lot. But his spot is been mostly on a wing, on a defensive wing. And I don't know. Like,
he's not getting Dersma's spot. He's not getting Heppel's spot. He's not getting McGrath's spot. He's not getting Redder's spot.
Yeah,
He's not getting Martin's spot.
The only spot he's probably could get is Kelly's at the moment with his form. Yeah. But it's not an obvious thing. It's not like a star. We're just waiting for this star in the VFL to come through. It's no offense, but it's pretty slim pickings. And because they feel like they're very young to me, and they need some
development. You could bring in Brian, but that's about it, really. Like you could do that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this week. And again, it's annoying. I hate it, right? But I hate the fact that now that it's a pressure game, man. It's another pressure game against the Dogs, and it's only pressure because the supporters are sitting there looking at them. The boys going, what the hell's going to turn up this week? That incredible game against St Kilda effort where we didn't give up and we got over the top of a reasonable side, or Witches hats against Port, mate. So
yeah, it would be so odd, wouldn't it, to see the last quarter of the St Kilda game and the last quarter of the Port game.
Oh, man.
Imagine if you watched them in tandem.
Exactly, you'd be, right, yeah.
You would understand how manic
and how weird one game
was and crazy, and it was like 10-1 clearances, and we had total field dominate. You'd go, how does that...
How does that
separate it so badly?
I might get hammered by the club from this. And if the club's listening, how confusing that is from a supporter's point of view. Mm. How confusing the really good effort against St Kilda was. And it's all you want to see running out there in an Essendon jumper. And then the really confusing perceived lack of effort in the last quarter, just as an example, with Port. It's very confusing. We don't know what the hell's going to turn up each week. We want it to be positive, and I really do want it to be positive. And that's like,
right.
After this pod, mate, Tuesday morning we wake up, that game's finished, right? We're looking forward to the Dogs. Ooh. I'm looking forward to another good effort from Jonesy. I'm looking forward to more effort from Durs and on those guys. I think we get Durham back and... I'm looking forward to that, right?
Yeah, I can't wait to have Durham back. But you're right. Again, a good one before we finish the show. Yep, Jonesy, really good to see him have a second game, state 19 marks in 2 weeks.
Good on him.
So he tried. Dersma tried. Merritt's really representing the club as best as he can. You've got to feel for him.
The man's a legend.
Look, the Crichton's already gone. Like, as long as he plays 16 games.
It's not even close.
But yeah, and Ben McKay
well done,
had
mate.
13 intercepts against St Kilda. He had 14 against Port.
Yeah, well done, mate.
So, 27 intercepts in 2 weeks. You got to hand it to him. So, and Gresham kicked 3, I think. So,
yep.
There was some positive. Actually, Jai Caldwell, the last 2 weeks, I've really liked his body language and his efforts. So,
and Nick Martin's kind of getting slim.
Yeah, Nick Martin's running. Nick Martin, you can say at least he's running hard. Like,
yeah,
not
absolutely.
Everything's coming, working to 100%.
38 touches or 34 or whatever it is. They're not the world's greatest.
But he's running hard, and that's all you can ask. But slim pickings after that. But
yep, absolutely.
Let's hope we can pick it up.
Tuesday morning, wake up, forgotten about it. We will be looking forward to Essendon v the Dogs
at Marvel.
Team selection Thursday night. We shall be here for our Patreons. By the way... patreon.com/lunchtime catch up. If you're not a Patreon, go and check us out. It is $5 a month, right? Like, that's a magic or whatever it's called, coffee. That's a new thing. I learned that is a thing called a magic. It's probably a regular sized magic for 8 extra shows a week. The Thursday night team selection show, the post-game reaction show, and guests as we get them. It's a massive bargain. Go over there and check us out at patreon.com/lunchtime catch up. But we'll be looking forward to the team selection on Thursday. The Dogs on Friday night again. A very high likelihood that we shall be there. And then the post-game reaction show will most probably be on Saturday morning.
Yeah, the Friday night games, unfortunately, we don't get back till almost midnight. So
yeah, so we're
that would be the next morning.
So the next day for the post-game reaction show. But thank you, everybody, for listening. We really hope you enjoyed. And a massive thank you to Rowan Connolly again. We really hope you enjoyed listening to him today. And we'll talk to you guys very soon.
Catch you.